Yeah, wait till this shit starts. You're gonna be so fucking mad.
Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. And, Max, hey. it's a dark time. The spooky season is over.
Yeah, it's drag.
Yeah, we had our fun. We had our spooks. Did you have a good time going to Halloween parties, doing your thing?
I did. My girlfriend was a 1920 flapper, and I was the stock market crash of 1929. That sent this country into the Great Depression.
That's perfect. I think it was worth it for you to destroy the box that we usually set the microphone on for this podcast so that you could use it to build your costume, because it was a really clever one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Did you have a good Halloween?
Yeah. My girlfriend and I were Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf, and we went to some parties, and yeah. I saw Halloween twice. Opening week. It was very good.
Oh, the new one.
Yeah, the new one. It was very good.
Did you like it? You liked it?
Yeah. It's pretty brutal, and I feel like they got the spirit of the first one. They nailed it. It was a fun movie.
I keep hearing that it's incredible. I watched the original, and I forgot how good that movie is.
It's classic.
Holds up.
Have you seen the second one?
Yes.
That has the most buck wild kill I've ever seen in a horror movie, where...
Which one?
I'm just going to set it up because I don't want to spoil it. This is your homework if you're listening. If you haven't seen Halloween 2, you have to see it because it's completely outrageous. There's a scene where they're looking for Michael Myers and they find a kid who's wearing the same mask.
Yep.
Something happens.
Yep.
Go watch the movie to find out. Well, let's have a moment of silence for the passing of our favorite holiday, Halloween. But we're not here to talk about Halloween. The silence is over. We're here to talk about death. Max, you've prepared a topic for us to talk about.
I have. So I already texted you to mentally prepare you for this day, because this is going to be the trickiest episode we've ever done.
Okay.
It's the most boring topic on the surface, but we're going to get some cool stuff out of here, and we're going to dive into kind of the cultural history of death. After we got a little weird with our October episodes.
Yeah. We covered zombies and then we covered vampires. But what's next? I just figured we'd cover aliens and werewolves after that. But I guess not.
That's very apt. And this is a very apt story. Because I was at work a few days ago. And I was talking to my coworker, Jenny. And she was like, oh, my husband is a fan of your podcast. Which is very nice.
Nice.
And she was like, he says he really likes it because even if he's not interested in the topic, you guys make it interesting.
Well, thanks.
It's a nice compliment.
Yeah.
But, Jared, I defy you to be interested in this one, because today we're going to be talking about trains.
Trains?
Trains.
What have you tricked me into?
So we got... coming up here, you see I got a fun little train premonition for you.
Yeah, thank you for at least starting off with a pretty humorous illustration in the show notes here of what seems to be hundreds of skeletons stuffed onto a train, and they're all wearing ties and reading newspapers on their way to work, presumably.
Every time I do notes for Dorian, I put a little image at the top of every one so I don't spoil it. Today, it's just a big train full of skeletons.
Going to work. Going to hell, probably.
Well, coming up, we got some necropolis railways. We got funeral trains. You know what I got right beside me?
What's that?
I got a Spindrift sparkling water.
Oh, let's crack into it.
Let's crack into this topic with the Spindrift cracking of the moment. nice smooth open.
Yowza. Yeah.
That's tart.
That's, yeah. Damn, you can tell they put real fruit in it.
Yeah, it feels wet. Tastes wet. I have a lot of fun singing notes in this episode.
Singing notes?
Yeah, because I just kept thinking, I'm a skull train. There's another good one, too. We're going to have a lot of singing.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, first off, as a thank you to all of our UK listeners, who we, for some reason, have a lot of, we're going to hop the pond to start off. Our first point of interest for the day is going to be the London Necropolis Railway.
That sounds cool as fuck.
It's fucking rad, and it's specifically set up so that I get my R's and W's mixed up.
Oh.
So I'm going to say, like...
Necropolis?
Necropolis Railway a lot. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to edit. I'm going to have, like, flashbacks to elementary school.
It's okay. We're adults now.
Yeah. So, Dorian, if you scroll down, you'll see the Great Seal of the London Necropolis Railway.
Dope.
Isn't that sick?
I feel like I should get this printed on a patch and put it on the back of a denim jacket.
Right? Like, if we could steal that, I don't know who made it, but if we could steal it for Pre-Dead Boys...
You did a good job, whoever made it.
Yeah. It's the coolest corporate seal that I have ever seen in my life. Dorian, can you do, like, a little descriptive work here?
Yeah. So, in the center, we've got an hourglass that is run out.
Uh-huh.
That's underneath a skull and crossbones. That's inside of a crest. There's a banner underneath that that says, Mortuis quies vivis salus.
That's Latin for a good life and a peaceful death.
Hell yeah. And then surrounding that is a snake eating its own tail.
Ouroboros.
Okay, yeah. And it says London Necropolis and National Mausoleum Company on his scales.
Yeah. And it's this cool, like, clearly hand-drawn thing that looks... It looks so cool.
The snake does have a big old googly eye, and it's cracking me up.
Yeah, he's kind of smiling, too.
Yeah, he's a little shy about...
Yeah.
He's being cute about eating his own tail.
So, the London Necropolis Railway... as one might expect, was a rail line that carried corpses, coffins, mourners, and funeral workers from London to a massive cemetery that was opened outside of the city. But Max, you might ask, why not just bury people inside the city of London?
Hey Max, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you bury the people inside of London, outside of London?
Well, Dorian, to that, I say... you are underestimating just how gross London got at points.
The city of London has existed for over 1,000 years. The Romans settled the area around 47 AD, and it was properly settled by the English in the year 886 AD. London's dead had traditionally been buried in and around local churches, but with a limited amount of space for burials, bodies were regularly exhumed from the oldest graves to free up space for new burials. However, in the first half of the 19th century, the population of London more than doubled from a little under a million people in 1801 to almost 2.5 million in 1851. Despite this sudden population growth, the amount of land set aside for use as graveyards remained unchanged due to the city becoming increasingly developed. Burial land spread approximately half a square mile across about 200 small sites.
Yeah. So, if you think back to our Paris Catacombs episode, the mid-19th century was a less than ideal time for being alive. It was also a less than ideal time for being dead.
You just can't win, can you?
You can't win.
Eish.
So, there were so many people that were dying at the time that they were running out of grave space. And so, as you said, if you had to find space for a grave, you would just kind of exhume an old grave, take the body, and if nobody claimed it, you would just kind of throw it in a river or something. And this isn't like a slam on the British or people in London at the time or anything like that. It's just what people did with bodies at the time. They didn't have an idea of how bad decay and decomposition could be, especially if it got into the water supply. So one of the biggest issues with all these people taking dead bodies and throwing them in the river that all the drinking water came from was that the city of London was continually ravaged by epidemics of typhus, smallpox, and cholera, all of which can easily be transferred to living people by a dead body. This nightmare peaked in 1848.
A global cholera epidemic struck the world in the 1840s. In England and Wales, between 1848 and 1850, cholera killed 52,000 people. In 1848, over 14,000 people were killed in London alone. Although the study of epidemics made huge strides during this period, the burial system was left completely overwhelmed. Bodies were left stacked in heaps awaiting burial, and even month-old graves were exhumed to make way for new burials. A public works project concluded that London's burial grounds had become so overcrowded that it was impossible to dig a new grave without cutting through an existing one.
This was bad. The city was kind of a mess at this point.
Just curious, how far along in the decomposition process is a body after a month?
You're still going to have some flesh on the bones.
Yeah.
It's not going to be all the way gone. You're not going to have a skeleton.
Yeah, that's going to be gross.
No, sorry, I burped out loud.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It added to the effect of it being gross.
So all that bacteria that occurs in decomposition is still going to be on that skeleton and flesh that's left on the skeleton when you get rid of it. So not only are people getting sick from these diseases, they're getting sick from exhuming all these old corpses.
Right.
Parts of this epidemic were so bad that one particular doctor, whose name was John Snow, for all you GOT fans out there. I don't watch.
Oh, it's a good show.
Yeah.
King of the North. That was a different character. That was a goof. Just goof.
But a doctor named John Snow was able to track a major cholera outbreak that killed 616 people to a single water pump on Broadwick Street in Soho of London.
Was John Snow, would you say that he was a knowledgeable doctor?
He's probably pretty smart.
Oh, so you wouldn't say that he knows nothing?
No, I would not say that.
Tell all your Game of Thrones fan friends about this new podcast, Cutting Edge. We got all the hot Game of Thrones comedy that you need to tide hot. You over for the 2 years you have to wait for the next season to come back.
Hot got takes.
Ooh.
But he found out that this one pump of water had killed 616 people.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It was just because so many cholera victims had died and the disease had seeped into the water supply that well drew from. They just bulldozed the well.
Huh.
They were just like, this is bad.
Yeah.
And they declared the water undrinkable and removed the pump. But because of the advances Snow made in the field of epidemiology, people realized how to conduct sanitary burials. They realized life would be a lot easier if, you know, they didn't have to be killed by communicable diseases all the time.
Weird. Weird conclusion to draw, huh?
They also got some better tasting water out of the deal, too.
Yeah. What does cholera taste like, do you think?
Probably a lot of blood.
Well, you know how cyanide, isn't that supposed to have kind of an almond flavor?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if cholera actually kind of tastes like garlic.
Like garlic water?
Ooh, yeah.
When I got my coffee this morning, the only coffee the deli had was Highlander Grog.
Ugh.
And I don't know if other places in Ohio have this. I don't think so. I've never seen it anywhere else. But it's like a weird caramel hazelnut. It's bad.
It's not that in and of itself it's a bad flavor. I don't know how you feel about flavored coffee, but I think come on. Like, I would rather have a just straight black coffee, or just give me like the most sugar overloaded, like half ice cream coffee beverage. Like, don't try to toe the line with a weird half-assed flavored coffee. You fucking kidding me? Get it out of here.
Yeah, I'm going to make this a declarative stance. Pre-Dead Boys against Highlander Grog.
Not a fan.
Throwing it down. You know what I do like, though? You get an iced coffee, you put a little bit of peppermint in there.
Okay.
Really choice.
Yeah. Yeah, the cool with the minty flavor.
Yeah.
I think I like that combo. I like it.
Yeah. people didn't want their water to taste super gross all the time.
That's a fair criticism. Yeah.
So it was decided that all new burials in London needed to take place outside of the city, where it wouldn't contaminate the water supply.
Right.
This resulted in the creation of Brookwood Cemetery, also known as the London Necropolis.
Brookwood Cemetery was the brainchild of Richard Brown and Richard Spire, who wanted to use newly developed railroad lines to alleviate London's dead body crisis. They purchased a 500-acre plot of land outside of the city of London. At the time, it was the largest cemetery in the world by size. Brown calculated that it would take almost 150 years to fill the cemetery, and they had plans to expand. His final plan involved a 2.3 square mile cemetery that would accommodate almost 6 million graves in a single layer.
Yeah, this was crazy.
Yes, but what is 2.3 square miles in the metric system?
I do not. I had to do so much bullshit with this and going between an acre, which nobody knows what an acre is.
Yeah, no, Americans don't even know what an acre is.
I don't even know if that's an American measurement. It's just like, my grandparents have an acre backyard, and I'm like, fuck, I don't know.
It's big.
It's fine.
An acre is big. We're both city boys, so any amount of farmland is large to us.
Yeah, I have like 10 square feet of a front yard, and it's shared with the other people on the other side of the half double.
We live in half of a house. That should say enough to you.
Yeah. My parents have a big yard.
Do they?
Which is nice. Yeah, it's like 3 acres. Again, could not tell you how big it is.
Tell me anything. I got a 50-acre closet.
So the major problem with Brookwood was that the cemetery was located about 23 miles from the city of London. It was far enough that it wouldn't contaminate the water supply, but in 1952, this was a prohibitive distance to take a body for burial. It was a prohibitively far distance to even travel that at all. People weren't like leaving where they lived back then still.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Luckily for them, that's where the railroads come in. Initially, it was planned that the bodies would be transported on the London and Southwestern Railway. The bodies would be transported in coffin trains carrying 50 to 60 bodies per trip. The train would drop bodies off at night, at which point they would be unloaded overnight and prepared for the burial the following day. Then the train would go back to London and bring the mourners back the next day so that they could conduct the funeral rites. This plan was scrapped because people thought it would be weird to have a whole train full of dead bodies shipping out at one point, and then a whole train just full of really sad people going the next day.
What a depressing train.
Yeah.
Front to back.
Yeah. And, you know, it would be strange to just put your loved one's body on a train and then be like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow, I guess. So eventually, the plan was adapted to create a railroad line that would allow mourners to be able to travel with the body of their loved one, thus officially creating the London Necropolis Railway.
On November 7th, 1854, the new cemetery opened and the Southern Anglican section was consecrated by Charles Sumner, Bishop of Winchester. On November 13th, the first scheduled train left the new London Necropolis Railway Station for the cemetery, and the first burial took place. The railway had branches in both London and Brookwood. Trains carried coffins and passengers from a dedicated station in Waterloo, London.
Where?
Waterloo! I was like, you want me to say Spindrift, London?
Waterloo! No, that's my favorite ABBA song.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. On reaching the cemetery, the trains reversed down a dedicated branch line to two stations in the cemetery, one for the burial of Anglicans and one for nonconformists, people who weren't members of the Church of England, or those who did not want a Christian funeral. The station waiting rooms and the compartments of the train, both for living and for dead passengers, were partitioned by both religion and class to prevent both mourners and cadavers from different social backgrounds from mixing.
Nothing like really keeping even dead bodies from mingling with lower class people.
Segregating. We can just call it segregating. That's what this is.
Yeah. They just didn't want to deal with people who were poor.
Yeah.
They were...
I'm okay with being next to rotting carcasses, but not poor people.
This also reminds me of one of my favorite Simpsons episodes, too, which is where Homer, like, stops going to church, and then he gets rescued by the volunteer fire department. And Reverend Lovejoy comments how the fire department is made up of people from all different religions. And he's going through and he's like, Christian, Jewish, miscellaneous. And that kind of seems like what they did here. Like, they were like, Anglicans, everyone else.
Okay, so they had a miscategory. There wasn't like, here's the Christian car, here's the Jewish, here's the Muslim, here is the...
No.
Okay, yeah.
It was members of the Church of England, and then other people. And I imagine that, like, the other car was also pretty much broken down by your particular faith in there as well. But
yeah, which I guess I can see the practicality considerations early on that would make that happen. It's England. You're probably going to have predominantly Christian faiths in, you know, in a much larger number than the miscellaneous category.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how segregation starts, I guess.
Yeah. And if you were like an Anglican, you would have to have an Anglican priest do your funeral. And then Catholics would need a Catholic funeral. Protestants or, you know, the world was opening up. So you would have people from different continents, and it would have been helpful to kind of streamline the process by just having everyone be able to get off where they needed to be, you know?
Yeah.
So. So the sheer amount of available space in the cemetery meant that burials could be offered at a relatively cheap price by today's standards. A first-class funeral would cost about $275 in today's money, while the cheaper rate was about $55.
Hey.
However, the average yearly wage in the working class person at the time was only about $50.
Oh boy.
So this created an extreme gap between the first class and the working class. A first class funeral was almost 5 years' wage of the normal person at the time.
Yeah.
This meant that if you were a first class passenger on the London Necropolis Railway, you were often treated to a private train car to be able to spend time saying goodbye, while third class passengers were shipped with multiple families in coffins in the same car, and it was kind of like one of those old cartoon train cars that you think about when you see, like, transients and vagabonds riding around in.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a door that opens up, and there's wooden slats inside, but nothing else.
Yeah, no actual furniture to sit on or anything like that.
Yeah, you would just stand with, like, eight coffins in a train car and everyone's family in there the whole time, you know? Yeah. There were also passenger cars tied to this train if you wanted to go visit the cemetery, but this also created some issues.
At 11:35 a.m., the train would leave London for Brookwood, arriving at Necropolis Junction, what a cool name,
yeah,
at 12:25 p.m. The return trains to London left Necropolis Junction at 2:30, and only one train typically ran per day. The train only ran if there was a coffin or passengers at the London terminal waiting to use it. It would not run if there were only third or second class coffins to be carried, and in these cases, the coffin and funeral party would be held until the next service.
Ooh.
Just wait with your decaying loved one, I guess.
Until someone rich dies.
Yeah, jeez.
And, you know, you also only have a couple hours if you're trying to visit the cemetery. You get there, if everything's running on time, you get there at 12:25, and you have to be out of there in 2 hours.
That's kind of interesting, though. I'd imagine that in this time period where you're kind of dependent on trains as a form of transportation, you don't really have your own car, and you have to be on time for things in a way that maybe we don't necessarily right now.
Yeah.
I guess there's a category for, okay, as awkward as it is, I got to wrap up this whole mourning process in a couple hours because life goes on. You know, I got to catch a train.
Yeah. And since this was so far out of the actual city, this was the only way to get there. If you didn't make it, you were, I guess, taking a horseback or walking 23 miles.
Or stranded in the necropolis.
Yeah. You just have to stay the night in this creepy old cemetery.
That's the metal album I'm working on, the concept album.
It's a good one. A ticket on the train also ran you $11 in today's money, which, again, is like 20% of the yearly salary.
Hey, but what was the price with Ticketmaster fees?
Oh, God. You don't even... Ugh. It'd been like 15.
Probably. Yeah. At least.
So this train, even though it only went to the necropolis, it wasn't only used by mourners. Around 1900, a premier golf course opened up in the land surrounding the cemetery. So this meant that even though tickets for the train were only sold to mourners, sometimes golfers who didn't want to take a private train to the golf course would pretend to be mourners and then just jump off the train when it passed the golf course.
Could you imagine having a heart-to-heart, like your loved one just died and you're like, hey, I assume you're here, you lost a loved one too, and you're like,
yeah, it's pretty
it's
rough.
Real bad. Yeah, they the cholera got the best of them. They were wait, here's my stop.
Ah! Bye. The London Necropolis Railway ran continually until 1941, when it was destroyed in the London bombings by the Nazis in World War II.
Those god dang Nazis!
They ruin everything cool. It sucks. Because of this, and due to evolving burial methods like cremation, the full development of Brookwood Cemetery, that millions and millions of people, that was never realized. It's currently still active. You can be buried there. But it only houses about 250,000 people, which is still a lot.
Yeah.
But they also support green burial options now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is a nice progressive thing. It's cool to see them kind of evolve with the times.
Can you briefly explain what green burials are for maybe a listener who's hearing that term for the first time?
Yeah. And actually, that pertains to Brookwood. Because they bought so much land, a lot of which is undeveloped and can only be used for burial, a lot of that land is just open fields. So what you can do is you can contact them and choose to not spend a lot of money on a huge extravagant coffin and instead choose to be placed in like a biodegradable sheet or a bag or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just dig a hole in the ground and lower that in. It's a much more environmentally conscious option than putting thousands of dollars of treated wood and metal into the ground.
Right.
I bet you can tell where we land on this issue.
Yeah. I respect anyone who wants to do something more traditional because, you know, there's a whole process of viewing a body when it's embalmed, and that's something that's not really doable with a green burial in the strictest sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's something that I want to have for myself, is something a little less like putting junk in the earth, a little bit more just kind of decaying naturally.
Speaking of viewing a body, my girlfriend and I have been watching The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
Lately. Have you seen it?
I watched the first episode. I still got a lot more to work through.
Oh, there's some cool stuff with open caskets in like the third episode.
Okay.
It's really cool and really creepy.
Good. I'm stoked.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
For the pre-dead boys, spooky season's never over.
Never over. So, just as kind of a closing bit, the cemetery is still there, and there's also a little memorial to the Necropolis Railway that's in the cemetery, which is neat. Hmm. If you are a listener in London, and you happen to live by this cemetery or any other cool remnants of this railway, I think there are some stations that are still in use. Send us a little pic.
Yeah.
Just tweet it at us.
Predeadboys@gmail.com. That would be awesome.
I would be stoked to see that.
I would be chuffed.
What?
Chuffed. It's what the... Is that... Hold on.
Uh-oh. Are we going to have to edit that out?
No. Okay. I was worried it was a cuss or something when you looked at me like that. But chuffed means very pleased. It's informal British.
Okay.
I'm chuffed. I would be chuffed to see a photo of that.
We would be... Two chuffed boys. Now, funeral trains weren't just confined to the UK. We've had our fair share over here in the States as well. They just look a little different. Over here, funeral trains are usually used to carry the body of a politician to their final resting place, while also being able to serve as a way for the public to pay their respects. We have a larger country. Sometimes it takes some time to transport a body from place to place. Why not have a memorial as you go, you know?
Yeah.
Two of the most famous examples we have are Abraham Lincoln and Bobby Kennedy. Let's start with Lincoln.
After Abraham Lincoln's assassination, he needed to be transported from Washington, D.C. to his final resting place in Springfield, Illinois. All told, the journey took almost 2 weeks and covered 1,654 miles, during which Lincoln's body would be removed and exhibited in state. The procession roughly retraced the route Lincoln took to Washington on the way to his first inauguration in 1864. The train left D.C., made stops in Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York City, Albany, Buffalo, Cleveland, Columbus,
what's up?
Indianapolis, Chicago, and finally Springfield. Altogether, the train passed through 444 cities in 7 different states.
Yeah, this was a big to-do at the time.
Big world tour.
Yeah, here's actually a photo of Lincoln's actual funeral procession in Columbus.
Hey, look at that ornate, I wanted to call it a parade float.
Yeah, it kind of looks like one of those big, like, four-post beds.
Yeah.
With a big sheet draped over it.
Yeah, or, you know, like, in Disney's Aladdin, when Prince Ali arrived with all of his elephants and camels and the huge procession.
It's like one of those
things.
On a big
platform. Yeah. Which, you know, I'll be honest, I think Prince Ali had Lincoln beat. He's only got, like, a few dozen horses in this.
They are white horses. They're very pretty horses.
Yeah, but their feet are a little dirty based on this photo.
Yeah, kind of muddy.
Yeah, it's a little muddy.
But that's our state house, the same state house we have today in the background.
They're on High Street.
Yeah, if you squint, you can see what will be Dirty Franks one day.
Lincoln would be proud.
So you can see what an event this would have been. You can see the people lined up on the street. There's fences keeping them away from the state house. But people came out to this. These stops would take place during the day, with Lincoln's body traveling at night to the next city. Unfortunately, because this took a long time, Lincoln's body had to be packed on ice to slow decomposition while on the train.
Lincoln on ice. Tickets available now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, by the time Lincoln got to Columbus, he was starting to turn.
Was he soggy? Did the ice melt? Was he soggy?
Yeah, it was kind of like when it's like 4th of July and you got your cooler and you pull like a bottle out of the cooler and the paper's like all sticky and gross.
Except instead of paper on a glass bottle, it's flesh on a flesh bottle.
Yeah, Lincoln was not looking good at this point. There's actually an article from the Columbus Dispatch at the time that interviewed the guy who had to come up and powder Lincoln's face to hide the discoloration before they let people in to view the body.
Oh, no.
And even then, the article talks about how people were hurried along so that they could repack the body on ice and so people wouldn't notice how, like, kind of off it looked.
Oh, look at that. Yep, that's the president. Very good.
Yep, move on. Go. So the funeral train was used for Lincoln because of his status as a unifier of the nation after the Civil War. The same kind of unity was seen in the life of Bobby Kennedy, who did a lot of work to unify the races during the super tumultuous 1960s. Bobby Kennedy was put on a funeral train following his assassination during the presidential campaign of 1968.
Following the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy in Los Angeles on June 5, 1968, his body was taken to New York City for a funeral mass in St. Patrick's Cathedral. After the completion of the mass, Kennedy's coffin was transported by a private funeral train from New York to Washington, D.C., to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery on June 8. It was a Saturday, and mourners came out by the hundreds of thousands to line the tracks along the 225-mile journey. A trip that would normally have taken 4 hours ended up lasting more than 8 hours.
Yeah. That's from an article in The Atlantic that we'll put in the show notes, because it does a really cool job of documenting this really neat story. Because on board the train, a photographer for Look magazine named Paul Fusco was documenting the event, and he was taking photographs of the people the train would pass as it would go by. So if you want to look at some of these photos, they're cool.
If I want to what? Some of these photos?
Look.
Look magazine.
Look magazine.
Hey.
Voice of the 60s.
It's not as good as Big Comic Spirit, but still a cool name for a publication.
But you can just see how the train tracks were lined with people.
Yeah.
Like, some of these photos aren't even at stations. It's just people who walked through the woods to stand by this train track that went through their town.
Yeah, you can tell a lot of these people just got up from whatever they were doing. I think there's people in bathing suits.
Yeah, there's some little kids right there
in bathing suits. Yeah, just in bathing suits. Like, they're like, oh, get out of the pool for a second. Go look at the dead president. Or not president.
Dead presidential candidate.
That, yes. Yeah. This is a cool series of photos. They're all whooshing by.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to see, like, this kind of national group mourning where people were just going about their daily lives, and then this kind of beloved cultural icon who was dead was being transported past them.
Hmm.
That one's a cool one.
Yeah, just a mom holding her child in the middle of a field. Ooh, grandpa standing on a Cadillac with no shirt on. A passing train? How hard was that photo?
I know, that's crazy. This guy did a good job.
Looks like we got a podcaster recording the action
off
here.
The side.
The 1968 version of a podcaster. What do they call that? They had the thing that played podcasts all day long. They sent it out on airwaves. What is that called?
Like a dead piece
of technology. You know what I'm talking about?
A radio?
Yeah, something like that.
A radio?
No one knows for sure.
Who knows?
It is really cool to see photos of just white faces and black faces blended together in the crowd. Like, it does echo what, you know, what Bobby Kennedy's life was about.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of wonder what the modern day parallel would be like.
You know, a great, like, unifying public figure like Donald Trump. Hot takes.
It is cool to see this kind of group mourning process where people are coming together to kind of honor this, you know, this person.
Yeah.
I don't really know what we would have today that would be comparable to this. I think the advent of television has, to an extent, you know, taken, not ruined it, but taken it away. I feel like without the train, this just can't happen because we don't really have another means of travel that is so close.
Right.
While also being able to move at, like, a pace that's kind of safe to be around.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, something like this definitely gets lost with bullet trains and,
yeah,
you know, flight and stuff like that.
Planes.
But, you know, with new technology and new transportation modes, maybe there's possibilities for some other documenting process that would be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just saying it would be neat, and it's kind of cool to see everyone participating. I feel like this is maybe the last time people would have shown up for a stranger's death.
Right.
A relative stranger, you know?
Yeah, a train procession.
Yeah. But you see, I mean, you see photos of, like, Prince's funeral and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we covered New Orleans, too, people showed up for it and people were there in attendance. But to imagine this on, like, a national scale where this train is going from New York City to D.C., which is, I've driven that. It's not short.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a really kind of beautiful image. And I really got to recommend looking at these photos if you can get your hands on them.
Yeah.
In the show notes.
We'll put the link in the description.
Yeah. It's got some interesting points about, like, collective grief, too, and how people were processing that as a nation together. It's neat.
Yeah. Well, very cool stuff, Max. Thanks for putting this together for us.
Trains.
Trains aren't as boring. Well, the trains aren't the interesting part.
It's the fact that there's dead bodies on them.
For sure. Thanks for putting that together. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Tell us what you think. What do you think of trains? You got any cool trains?
I hope you like them.
No, we don't give a shit about the trains themselves. But if you want to talk to us for whatever reason, hey, we're here for you. Pre-dead boys want to talk. You can tweet at us, find us on social media, at predeadboys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can go tip us $3 or more at ko-fi.com/predeadboys. If you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. Mostly, though, just tell your friends about this podcast. If you enjoy it, if you think it's interesting and informative, tell someone who you personally know. We're not really about buying ads and follows and the marketing machine that a lot of people are all about with podcasting and internet content. We don't do that. We like people who are actually interested to find it organically.
Yeah. I like to think that we are one of the nicest podcasts out there.
I try to be.
We've got a cool little community built up in the Facebook group. And
yeah, even though I talk shit about a lot of people and a lot of seltzer water companies, and I think I shat on, you know, stamps.com.
Yeah, we leaned into that at one point.
I'll be nice to, you know.
Others. We're nice to individuals.
I'm nice to real people, not to, I guess, I don't know. I've got some introspecting to do on that and why I'm real mean to people. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by the band Brat Curse. Look them up. Listen to their new stuff. You can find them at bratcurse.bandcamp.com.
They got a new song on Spotify.
Yes, they do. It's good stuff. And thanks again for listening. Max, you got any parting words for our listeners?
If you're going to be on a train, don't be a big jerk and make people pay a lot of money to be on it. I don't know. I don't have any thoughts about trains. I don't give a...
Nobody cares about trains.
Fuck about trains. But Necropolis... God, that seal is so cool.
Just anytime you encounter the word Necropolis, I'm stoked.
It's so rad.
It is. Max and Dorian here reminding you, trains fucking suck, and also, you're gonna ride.
Now, the band train.
The band train, on the other hand.
Rocks. Drops of Jupiter slaps. I don't care what anyone says.
Do you really like that song?
Yeah, it's great.
Unironically?
Yeah. Maybe it's not that one. Maybe it's Meet Virginia. I don't know if it's the same song or not.
They're different songs.
Okay, Meet Virginia is good. Meet Virginia has a cool guitar solo.
I think it's way too easy a target to hate on Train. But I do think that they are consistently one of the worst bands in existence. Like, they just make that airy pop, frou-frou-y bullshit that, like, plays at Starbucks. And I think even Starbucks doesn't even play them anymore. They're like, this is bad for our brand. This band is too generic and soft.
Let me see here. We are the nicest podcast, except for the members of the band Train. Patrick Monahan. Luis Maldonado, Hector Maldonado, Drew Scholes, Jerry Becker. Holy shit.
How did you find my personal hit list? Where did you find that?
Well, you can't say that.
I've been looking for that. No, I'm joking.
Enemies list.
Stinky boys list. I'm not going to hurt them. I'm just going to tell everybody what stinky boys they are. Jesus Christ, what a massive band.
Yeah, right?
They have 18 different people who all stopped giving a shit enough to be in the band Train.
Wait, can you scroll down to performances and media appearances?
Wikipedia.org has this. They performed Merry Christmas Everybody from their album Christmas in Tahoe on December 23rd, 2015 for the WWE.
Oh, fuck. Do you know what Train did in 2016?
What do they do?
They covered the entirety of Led Zeppelin 2.
God. Why would anybody want to listen to that?
Oh, 2 has the Lemon song, which is the worst song ever written.
I want to die now just thinking about Patrick Monahan singing that he wants
someone to squeeze his lemon
till the juice runs down his leg. Yep, I want to die now. Just kill me. All right, is that enough post-episode content now that I'm just fucking outraged by this band?
I fucking hate Train.
Fuck Train and fuck trains.
Drops of Jupiter rules. No, Meet Virginia rules. Meet Virginia rules.
You can't even make up your mind.
I can't remember what the good Train song is.
None!
My mom's gonna be pissed.
None of them! Oh, Is Mrs. McKenna a big
she's a fan.
Train fan?
She's a all fan. Right.
Well, more power to you. She's a strong woman.
Teeny.
I know that she has to be a strong woman to be able to stomach that band. All right, I'm going to stop recording.